The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
I don't know. Just feeling the void. I don't even know how to do the show.
Why?
It's
just...
There's a...
10 seconds in.
There's a vacuum at the top, Ursula. I don't want to be in a state with no Governor Inslee running things.
You're just feeling off, right?
Yes, yes. I've for years now. How long's he been governor? 6 years? For years now, I've been doing the show with Inslee at the top, and now that he's gallivanting all around the country, I don't know what to do. I'm not used to doing a radio show when I don't have that kind of person at the helm, that kind of leadership at the top. Let me get into the big lead.
The big lead, top story.
Speaking of Inslee, so this weekend I was looking at pictures from a bygone day when Inslee and I played basketball together.
Yeah.
And the gym, my gosh, that gym was jam-packed, sold out.
Packed.
It was to the rafters.
Yes.
And then after I kicked his butt, there's a picture of us just kind of almost hugging, shaking hands. We're both smiling.
Uh-huh.
I have to say, 6 years later, he looks fantastic.
I'm a mess.
I can't believe how much I've aged in the last 6 years.
I was noticing when he had his news conference last week. He's trimmed down.
Oh, my goodness gracious. Yeah. So, but I'm pulling pictures for this this live show that we're doing, and that was my big takeaway. 6 years have been much kinder to him than to me. He's a good-looking man. I'm a mess.
You're not. You're too hard on yourself.
No, I'm just being real. But the thing is, as I was watching, looking at that, because we had this relationship, me and him, and I'm still fine having a relationship with the man. But I had to make a choice when he started doing things like lying about not raising taxes. I had to make a choice about whether I was going to just kiss up to him, or if I was going to be furious that after promising me and my listeners that he would not raise taxes, that he has signed off on the biggest tax increases in the history of the state of Washington, and that made me furious. And so I decided I couldn't sell out, just so I could stay buddy-buddy with him. And so now I think he doesn't like me.
Have we tried to get him on again?
And by the way, I'm fine if that's the case. Have we tried to get him on?
Yeah, we did a couple months ago or a few months ago, but he's got some new people around him as well.
Yeah.
So they've been a little bit
been a little bit busy.
And he's kind of boring on the air, too. I mean, it's not like it's a big loss for the show. But anyway, yeah, it was just weird. It was weird to go back. Let me talk about this a little bit more as we get into the big lead.
The big lead. Your tax dollars at work.
By the way, speaking of that live show.
I know.
Sold out.
Over the weekend.
Over the weekend. It sold out in three
Thank
days.
Thank you.
Yeah, that was very, very sweet. That was really nice of our listeners. So April 12th in Kirkland, 8 o'clock Friday night.
You can't go if you didn't get tickets.
Yeah, yeah. If you're dragging your feet. Sorry about that, but anyway, that's really nice and very gratifying, and I really appreciate everybody who's being so supportive of this.
And again, if it's good, if we have a good reception from it, then we're planning on bringing it to other people.
Yeah, exactly. We'll go elsewhere. So we'll have other opportunities for it. Okay, so Jay Inslee is out gallivanting around the country. They call it barnstorming still. Speaking at Steak Fries in Iowa, county fairs in New Hampshire, union halls in Nevada, and on every national cable news show that'll have them, which is MSNBC and CNN, basically. So Inslee, the Seattle Times, says, who's running the state? Because Inslee's paid $177,000 a year to be the governor. Not only that, but his lieutenant governor, Cyrus Habib, who takes over for him, the guy who's too scared to do his job because he doesn't like our state constitution, the guy who wouldn't show up and preside over the legislature, which is about the only job of a lieutenant governor, because our state constitution allows people to carry guns at the state capitol. And he was scared that our constitution says that, so he refused to do his job. That's Cyrus Habib. So that shows you kind of wimpy guy we got running things while Inslee is gone. But not only that, Cyrus Habib makes a real nice six-figure salary. But every day that Inslee is gone, Cyrus Habib gets an extra $281 a day, which works out to almost $150,000, $140,000 a year. So on top of his salary, $281 a day for him to assume the role of governor. Can anybody explain to me why Inslee or Inslee's campaign doesn't have to pay that? To pay a guy to do Inslee's job while Inslee is out looking for a better job. I talked about this on Friday. Can you imagine going to your boss? Let's say that you're a software person, and you're at Microsoft, and some high-tech company down in Silicon Valley has an opening. Do you think you could go to your bosses and say, hey, I'm going to be gone for a few days. I'm going to go down to Silicon Valley. I'm going to interview with another high-tech company. I'm going to see if they'll give me a better job with more pay, but I want you to pay me. I'm not going to take any personal days. I'm not going to take any vacation days. I'm not going to call in sick. I just want you to pay me while I go try for a better job in Silicon Valley. How do you think your reception would be from your bosses? And yet, we're the boss of the governor. Why do we put up with this? Why in the world do we have to put up with that? The Seattle Times had a story about this, and they're talking about some of the challenges in our state. There was one line in the Times story that infuriated me. They said that they got to reverse the crisis in the struggling mental health system in our state. And 2 years after declaring victory, legislators face yet another education funding shortfall. No, they don't. A funding shortfall would mean we're not giving enough money to education. What there is education overspending. It's not that we're not giving them enough money. It's that they are spending way too much money. And why is that? It's because of the teacher strikes and the dramatically higher salaries, which is all part. And I'm going to give you some information here that I guarantee you're not going to get anywhere else, about the larger guiding hand behind these teacher strikes and the teachers getting more money, even though the districts knew they didn't have the money to pay for it, and how this is part of a much, much larger plan that goes far beyond our state for really insidious goals. Let me get to the next point in our big lead.
The big lead, bizarro world.
Okay, so the Seattle Times also had a piece that nearly every school district is facing a dramatic shortfall because they gave way too much to the teachers. And you may recall that as these teacher strikes were getting settled, they immediately, the days after they got settled, the superintendent of public instruction said, we need an income tax to pay for all of this now. We need you to give us more of your money. We need you to take a pay cut so the teachers can get these massive raises for their four-fifths jobs. And so that's what they're demanding now. But who's guiding all of this? Have you ever heard of the organization Red for Ed? Red for Ed. They have a playbook for teachers. You know, it's right out of Saul Alinsky's playbook. And one of their organizers, one of the leaders of the Red for Ed movement, wrote about this in a magazine called Jacobin. And Jacobin magazine, it's a Marxist magazine. or an unabashed promoter of Marxism. Jacobin takes its name from the radical left Jacobins, who turned the French Revolution of the 1790s into a bloodbath for their opponents. So in this playbook for teachers, they wrote about how, you know, the rank and file, particularly in right-to-work states, has to organize, the need for community-centric orientation to teachers' movements, that democratic organizing must be embraced, that the gradual escalation of tactics that was embraced in Arizona, one of the states that also is following this template, and originally mobilized in West Virginia, it's a vital strategy that can be duplicated in nearly every and any setting, and to use the power that the teachers have. And when the power is to hijack money that the districts do not have, that the taxpayers do not have, and we're squeezed. We're paying more in taxes to the state of Washington than ever before, per capita adjusted for inflation. We have never had to pay so much to the state of Washington as we do now. And anybody who thinks that this is about the kids, the grand lie that the unions tell, we just want smaller class sizes and better education for the children. No, you don't. You want to use, the unions want to use their massive power to extract money that doesn't exist, which everyone's happy to give because they see this as an end goal of getting a state income tax. And that's why Inslee has proposed it. The superintendent of public instruction has proposed it. They gave away money they didn't have, and now they're going to say, oh, we have a budget shortfall. Bull. You got a spending overfall. And now we're going to have to fight off an income tax. And I'm telling you, this is the fight of our lives. You know, I've said the income tax and tolling every road, the two grand plans to extract money from you and me to give to them. Those are going to be the two great fights in the next couple of years. And when you hear any connection to budget shortfalls, wrong. They gave the teachers way, way, way too much in these strikes. And now they say, well, we're going to have to cut staff. We're going to have larger class sizes. And they don't care. None of this is about the kids. And the beat goes on. But remember that. And I'll follow more closely and share with you more about this Red for Ed movement and how Marxists are using our children going through the teachers' union to try to get an income tax in the state. Connect those dots, because that is what's going on here. Next up in the Big Lead.
The Big Lead, top trending.
And then you got that despicable Seattle City Councilwoman, Kashama Sawant. She's the one who has no problem calling cops who have been exonerated by an inquest board, who the prosecutor says there's no way they would file charges. But Sawant said this of cops.
Che Taylor was painted as a criminal, even though he was murdered by the police.
He was murdered by the police. Did you hear what a left-wing judge did with the cops' lawsuit against Sawant for calling them murderers? U.S. District Judge Marsha Peckman threw out the defamation claims by the officers, said they cannot refile the claim. Officers Scott Miller and Michael Spaulding. I mean, that soundbite I just played. She's talking about the Shea Taylor killing. Sawant says they were murdered by the police. And Scott Miller and Michael Spaulding are the Seattle cops who were identified as the shooters. But what the judge said is, Councilmember Sawant did not identify officers Miller and Spaulding by name, nor did she provide any information that would even remotely allow listeners to ascertain their identities. Finally, Councilmember Swant's statements referred broadly to the police, the Seattle Police Department, and systematic police brutality and racial profiling, but never specifically identify the two officers. The cops had been identified. Their names were out there. They're the ones who shot Shay Taylor. Listen again. What Swant said.
Shay Taylor was painted as a criminal, even though he was murdered by the police.
Murdered by the police. And everybody knew who the police officers involved were. And believe me, I have to know a little bit about defamation because I talk on the radio spontaneously, ad lib, for 3 hours a day. And you don't have to name somebody if they are identifiable in your comments. And if all reasonable people, this judge's ruling is part of the bizarrety. The other part is that you and I have had to spend more than $250,000 to defend Swant because her cronies, her fellow Marxists on the Seattle City Council, they said, you know what, let's have the taxpayers. We don't want her to have to pay for her own defense. The city of Seattle, we will pick up the tab, and the taxpayers can pay for her defense costs. And so far, it's more than $250,000 for a loose-lipped politician. She says that she's a Marxist, socialist Marxist. But man, I tell you what, she has no problem sucking $250,000 out of the taxpayers that could go for other things. Could go to people in need. But now it goes to her because of her mouth. Your tax dollars at work. And that is your big lead for today.
The Big Lead on Cairo Radio.
Oh, what a special, special weekend. My wife and I went down to the Tacoma Dome and watched Brock Heward's daughter's team win the state championship, girls basketball. It was really cool. And it's perfect timing because the Monday Monster quarterback, Brock Heward, will join me. That topic may come up next on the Dory Monson Show.
Monday Monson quarterback.
Blue in it. Check, 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 check. Brown 24 Razor.
Brought to you by IRG Physical and Hand Therapy on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM with the 12s. Hear the Hawks.
Play fake to Benny Russell. Lets it go down the far sideline. Reaching up, making the catch. Touchdown, Seahawks.
Here's Dory Monson.
It is Monday afternoon, and that means it's time for the Monday Monson quarterback, and that, of course, would be Brock Heward from 710 ESPN Seattle. We need a different updated champion song. I'm getting a little tired of this one.
I'd agree.
But
when it's played, it still feels pretty good.
You never get tired of championships.
This is going to be a special little Monday morning quarterback.
How was that for the Heward household
pretty
this weekend?
Pretty stinking.
Tell me all
neat.
About
pretty neat, Dory. Yeah, my oldest Haley in East Lake High School. The girls and I don't think the boys have ever won a state basketball title. And Saturday night, the East Lake girls won the first state title, and man, it was special. This was a tough journey this year. We've had a lot of conversations, you and I, maybe not on the radio, but a lot of them on off the air, and to see all that they persevered through.
Yeah.
To have so many, and I said this a number of times on my show this morning, while Dory, you may not want to do sports, right? While you are the number one rated news guy and you love news, and you'd look at me many times and go, what are you guys possibly talking about in sports? What's going on in February? Nothing, Dory, nothing's going on. There is something communal about sports. There's something about bringing people together in a way that's truly unique. And we saw in the Tacoma Dome, you experienced in your life being a state champion coach. You watched a bunch of kids get crowned all weekend long in the Tacoma Dome for the state championships in the boys and girls basketball and over in Yakima as well. And there is just something about the sense of community you have with sports. And high school may just be the purest of all. Pros, corporate, college feels a little tainted. Youth sports can be a disaster, especially with parents. High school, you still have a bunch of kids on the team that are there not because of their talent, but because of their work, their friendships, social element, everything else. And high school may just be the purest form today, in this day and age in our country, of sport. And winning a title for Eastlake was pretty special for the girls.
Well, and it's I absolutely agree with you. The only things that galvanize us are sports and tragedy. I mean, sports is about the only positive thing that galvanizes us. And I see so many, I'll get real sociological on you here. In Seattle, Seattle's the least churched and the most childless major city in the country. And when you have that, because usually schools and church are the hub of a community.
Yep.
When you have these small towns that were represented in Tacoma and Yakima and Spokane this weekend, when you have the suburbs like you live in, the school becomes the hub. And that is so important. It is so important to hold on to that sense of community. And so, yes, I'm very, couldn't be happier for you.
It was fun to have you next to me. I'm sorry for hitting you. I'm sorry.
I was okay with that.
I'm sorry for saying to you, you better get out of here because I don't know what kind of awkward hug is coming. It ended up being a normal hug.
I was okay with all of that.
Yeah, it reminded me my very first broadcast I did of college football. The play-by-play guy was kept hitting me on the arm. I was like, dude, just relax. Do your job. But he kept hitting me. So I was hoping that I wasn't being that same annoyance to you.
No.
But to have you on my left and Molly was on my right and my father-in-law and my family and my friends, so many friends there. It was just so special. And I don't know. I really wasn't nervous. The girls were so tough. They were playing so free and fearless. It was cool for you. You got to see them a few weeks before when they got knocked out.
Yeah.
They got knocked down. They got bloodied. They got knocked out of the game. A bunch of them did. And that kind of galvanized them as well. And just to have that experience for my daughter and for those girls to be the first to ever do it there. And we were at the dinner table last night. It was really cute. My wife, Molly, she was a basketball player. She played in college. She could feel it and sense all of it. And at the dinner table last night, she said to Haley, now you realize, like when you're our age, 25 years after high school, your team will still go back to pep assemblies and the basketball assemblies and the school and your reunions. And guess what? You guys will be forever. You'll be the first ever state champs for your school. And you'll be remembered for that forever. And at 16, she's like, okay.
Yeah.
She's maybe not processing all of that, but as adults, we do of their incredible accomplishment.
Yeah, and that's why, yeah, it just means so much. And yeah, when we got it, it was 3 years ago. Same thing, first one, boys or girls in school history, because you and I talked a lot that year. You want to talk about travails?
Yep.
And we lost 10 games. We're the only state champs in history that lost 10 games. I'm the crappiest regular season coach in the history of high school basketball, Brock, to lose 10 games with a state champion team. How does that even happen?
I don't know.
Oh, man. But yeah, and here's what shocked me. You and your wife didn't cry.
Mm-mm. Not until we saw Haley afterwards.
You didn't cry. Uh-uh. That surprised me because you are one of the few people who kind of matches me in emotion.
Yep.
How did that happen?
No, I think honestly it was just looking down, and I didn't even realize you were filming us, right? And I was whispering in my wife's ear like, man, this journey. It was a couple weeks ago. We thought this was done. This was over. Can you even believe what these girls just did? So that's a lot of what I was whispering in her ear in that video that you posted and you tweeted out, and watching it was a little surreal. Was kind of out of body. Just even watching the video, being there was. Now, when Haley ran up about an hour later, when we were up there with all the family and friends, and she ran up, there were lots of tears.
Oh, yeah.
And she just cried, Dory. It was amazing. She flooded with tears, and she said to me, she goes, man, all these, like, tough games, all these years. She struggles a little like I did as a player, and that is just turn your mind off. Just be free, right? And she got some great counsel at the end of the season saying your mind is a partner, not an adversary.
Mm-hmm.
Partner with your mind. And she just really hung on to that. And she was crying all these trips we had, all this journey, Dad, for all of this. And she's sobbing and I'm sobbing, you know, at that point. So there were plenty of tears later. Maybe not in that moment when they were champs, because that was just pride. That's probably pride as much as anything. But there were plenty of tears because it's been quite a journey.
Well, and it's such a great lesson. It's something that I'm sure you talk a lot about with your kids, but as a coach, goal setting is so important to me, individual and team goal setting. And for these kids, you know, the exceptional ones, they start in kindergarten.
Mm-hmm.
They play year round. They go to camps. They play select ball. And that's, you know, that's what you got to do if you want to climb the mountain. And so to see the fruit of all of that labor, what a life lesson.
It is. And I think even more, Dory, these kids today versus me 25 years ago is what they have to deal with. The amount on them of expectation. The social media world is so awesome, right? She had like 59 texts. She was just like working through it till 4 in the morning, and Instagram and all of that. It has great fruit. Like, you get to share with so many people, but there's also tremendous burden. There's the weight of feeling all of that and carrying that and some of the doubt that that creates and everything else. And, you know, it is, and while it's a high school sport, you know, there are still incredible, incredible life lessons. And when it gets hard, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
You know, when they lost a Woodinville game and the student body at the end of the game is chanting to her, overrated, overrated, like you're overrated, you're like. And just feeling that, I mean, what welled up in me in that moment, like I was ready to run across the court and just tackle all them boys and everything else. That's what you've got to live with. That's when you go be a competitor and you do this. And that's what's just so beautiful about sport, because it prepares you for life.
Yeah.
And you say it all the time on your show, not in sport, but in life. You get knocked down. What are you going to do? You can pout, be a victim, woe is me. Or do you pick yourself up and just go continue to battle? And these girls did it. Keely and May and Callie and the whole crew were so awesome. And Sarah galvanized them as a team at the right moment, their head coach, Sarah Goldie. And they have a memory now that they'll carry with them for the rest of their lives.
Look at you. You are just beaming, man.
Man, it's fun.
You are beaming.
Fun.
That is so cool.
How about that picture I sent holding the trophy and that smile and that joy? I don't think I've ever seen that smile. I certainly haven't seen it in a few years here, right? Yeah. These teenage years, there's a lot of weight they're carrying, and that was just pure unadulterated joy.
Well, and when you talked about the overrated thing, you and I have also talked off the air. Your kids are carrying your name and your wife's accomplishments, mm-hmm. you know, at the highest college level. And so to see them prevail in spite of all that or because of all that, I don't know which one it is. But
don't make me cry now. All right.
I'm not going to do it. That's what I'm trying for.
I know.
I'm trying to pull it out of you.
You did,
come on.
No, I'm not going to do it.
I'm trying for 2 days to watch you cry.
Pretty amazing.
All right. Congratulations, Brock.
Thanks,
Brock. Really fun. I'm glad.
Congratulations to Eastlake, to Sarah, to the school, to all of them, and those girls that played their tails off.
Yes, they did. It was very cool. We are the champions. And by the way, what we just said, it's because it's Brock's daughter and my friend's daughter, but it's true about every boys and girls team in Tacoma, in Yakima, in Spokane this weekend. We could say the same thing about every single one of those kids. Way to go. Way to get it done. We have lots more. That is, Brock Hewitt is the Monday Monson quarterback. Brought to you by IRG, Physical and Hand Therapy. And we have lots more straight ahead. It's the Dory Monson Show.
The champions roll on.
And my curtain calls.
Love to hear your thoughts. The Online Trading Academy text line is open. You can text me at 98973. That's 98973. One person in the conversation I just had with Brock. I don't like a lot of the modern world. This is from the 206. But I do love the development of women's athletics. These girls grow so much. And I tell you, I used to do play-by-play. of the state high school basketball tournament back in the late 80s. I was just a kid myself. And I did the girls' state championship game, the 4A state championship game. And I remember the caliber of play back in the late 80s. And I will tell you, a good JV team today is better than the state championship teams back in the 80s in girls' basketball, because the game has evolved. It's kind of like, you know, men's basketball. If you've seen, have you seen NBA, the old black and white films from the 50s, George Mikan, and you compare it to the game today? Well, what happened in men's basketball from the 50s to the 80s, it's happened in women's basketball from the 80s to the 2010s. Over the weekend, Donald Trump was, I saw something amazing. Nick Gillespie from Reason.com. I've had Nick on the show many times. I really like him. But he made it clear when he was on with me at the Republican convention, he did not like Trump. Their Reason is libertarian. They're more open borders. But he had a big, long column, and he said Trump's speech at CPAC, the Conservative Action Group, this weekend, he said it may have won him 2020. He said he was comfortable. He was funny. He had a little New York attitude. And then I wake up this morning, NBC has Trump at 46% in their polling. Here's a little bit of Trump at CPAC.
I'm going to regret this speech. This speech should have been delivered 1 year from now, not now, damn it. Because they're going to grip together. They're going to say, you know, this guy's really laying for us. I should have saved the Pocahontas thing for another year. Because I've destroyed her political career, and now I won't get a chance to run against her, and I would have loved it. We got to, you know, I don't want to knock out all of the good stuff and end up with somebody that's actually got talent. That would be terrible. So I do like the Green New Deal. I respect it greatly. It should be part of the dialogue of the next election. And I think it has tremendous promise and tremendous potential for the future of our country.
So yeah, NBC has him at 46% approval. And I know why. Because the more people hear AOC or even Jay Inslee on his single issue and Pocahontas, the more they hear Trump looks sane in comparison to the whack jobs that the Democrats are trotting out as their party saviors. Oh, it's going to be long next year and a half, isn't it? That's 15 next.